Hi, and welcome to Basic Folk, where we have honest conversations with folk musicians. It's Cindy Howes. Hello and welcome if this is your first time listening. Oh boy, we're in for a really wild time here. Cinderwell is who we are featuring today. Cinderwell is actually the California-born Amelia Baker, and she makes spooky folk songs in the Irish music tradition. Amelia grew up in Santa Cruz, California, in a non-religious Jewish family. Her parents always had music on the stereo, like Bob Dylan, Neil Young, Joni Mitchell, Grateful Dead. Music was always on in the house. From a young age, she was drawn to the vibe and the strange stillness of abandoned houses, which somehow has translated pretty well into her music. In high school, she discovered the joy of writing and recording music, and she found that writing put her in touch with the humanness of her favorite musicians. Amelia earned her master's in Irish traditional music performance at the University of Limerick. While in school, she would visit the nearby town of Ennis, first being attracted to the fiddle tunes that she would find there. She talks about what it was like to be able to play fiddle with the local musicians and how their practice of listening to each other changed her own musicality. Her latest album is the much-lauded No Summer. It was recorded in a church north of Seattle, Washington. Among original songs, there are a few traditional tunes on the record. She says, "I gravitate towards ballads from a strong female perspective, usually about critiquing men and marriage and the struggle and desperation of being a woman in older times," which makes total sense when you hear the music. We'll take a listen to the title track from her album, No Summer, and then we'll talk to Amelia Baker, who is otherwise known as Cinderwell, coming up on Basic Folk.
Rain dripping down my brittle dry hair, gazing at the water, pulling on the concrete. The steeple makes shadows, dancing with the street lights, listening to him sing in a language I don't understand. Much like my home, much like my home, much like my home, much like my home.
Amelia Baker, thank you so much for being on Basic Folk. It's so nice to meet you.
It's so nice to meet you, Cindy. Thanks for having me.
You grew up in Santa Cruz in a non-religious Jewish family, from what I understand. Can you just set the scene, like what it was like for you where you grew up? Like, how did you like it?
I actually am from Santa Barbara.
Well, Santa Barbara, also lovely.
Very lovely, very beachy, very different than here. Yeah, so Santa Barbara, just north of Los Angeles. It's a beautiful place. I was really into surfing, love to shred. Yeah, the non-religious Jewish thing, the way I can best describe it is, especially to people over here where there's not a lot of Jews, is like Seinfeld, Curb Your Enthusiasm, this like comedic Jewish culture where there's not a lot of religion, but there's a lot of talk about being Jewish. There wasn't a lot of us in Santa Barbara, but my family was really close-knit in that way.
And your parents sound like they had some pretty cool music taste. Bob Dylan, Neil Young, Joni Mitchell, Grateful Dead. How did your parents treat or think of music? Like, if it was important or special to them, or if they just didn't really think about it that much?
There's always music playing on the stereo there. My dad, back in the day, had a huge CD collection, and now that's gone all digital. But it was the kind of thing where every time we were having friends over for dinner or family over for dinner, the music was on. You know, it was like, cue James Taylor, family friends are coming over kind of thing. My uncle was like the true Deadhead, and my dad kind of followed suit, but didn't go quite as far. So there was a lot of the Dead in the house, and that culture was like a little bit on the periphery. My mom is just still obsessed with Joni Mitchell, and she used to say that she wanted to be Joni Mitchell, so she like took a few guitar lessons and didn't stick with it. I think she has this like stage mom kind of wanting her daughter to be Joni Mitchell, which no one could be her, but it's good to strive. Right.
The genre of music that you play now has been referred to as gloom folk. Is that accurate?
I've seen that. Yeah, I've seen doom folk.
Yeah. Your music has been described as haunting, and I read that you like spooky things, exploring abandoned houses, and you say, I find inspiration in things that have more of a presence and a meaning than what you see at first glance. I'm wondering, like, what your experience with spooky things and, like, exploring kind of off-limits places and loving things that were not as they seem, like, what that experience was like for you, and then how do you think it has translated for you as an adult?
I think, and that's kind of another thing I got from my mom. She's always had this interest in houses. We go walk around the neighborhood, and she'd kind of be scoping neighbors' houses just for aesthetics, I think. But I remember as a kid staying different places, just kind of picking up on things in houses that felt old. I don't know what it was. It's hard for me to like fully describe or put my finger on it, but I like kind of surrealist literature, just when there feels like there's a vibe. And I think with abandoned houses, I just have this real obsession, and I'm not exactly sure where it came from, but I kind of can't get enough of it. And I have this reverence if I go up to an abandoned house where it's like, it's kind of off limits, as you said, but I'm really interested, but I also have a lot of like respect. And if I feel that it's not a place to go into, I won't go in and I'll just kind of leave it alone.
Right. Like when you do go in though, what kind of things go through your mind while you're exploring?
There's just this strange stillness in places like that. You feel that people have lived there, but I don't think too much about the people or try to, I'm not doing stuff like that to like channel a presence or like get too involved. I think what I like about it is almost like tiptoeing on the edge of it and yeah, feeling it out without disturbing anything. And if it feels disturbing either to me or to the house, then I'm just kind of out of there.
It almost seems like you're trying to like channel the vibe.
Yeah, exactly. Just pick up on the feeling of it. Just feel what it's like to be in a space like that that has been left alone, but still remains there. For some reason. People haven't knocked it down. People haven't rearranged it.
You took some piano lessons as a kid, but that didn't really work out. But you started writing songs and playing guitar in high school. What was that process of discovering songwriting like for you?
It was awesome. I think about it sometimes. I had a friend who was like starting to write songs and play covers and stuff and playing guitar. Somehow he remembered that I sang in high school and he would force me to sing songs. I recorded with him something. Oh yeah, I recorded a Cat Power cover. And I'd never heard myself recorded before. And on hearing it back, I just thought it was so awesome. It made me have this connection that these artists, I was really into listening to music and discovering a lot of new artists. And it made me realize that they were actually human beings playing instruments. Like, I think they just seemed on this like elevated godly status.
Yeah.
And when I heard myself back, I realized I could also record.
That's really cool. And I really like how you liked the way your voice sounded. You didn't like cringe away.
Yeah, I really didn't. I don't think I'd ever heard it, but I really did like it. And that was kind of the motivation for then writing, because I wanted to just sing. And so, yeah, I used the piano to write a bit too. But then if I wanted to be portable and like jam with friends, I had to take the guitar.
Right. So you went to high school in Santa Barbara.
Mm-hmm.
And then How did you end up in Santa Cruz?
I went to college in Santa Cruz.
Good choice.
Yeah.
Seems like a fun college town. Yeah.
It was wacky.
While you were in Santa Cruz, you were there for 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
There was like a really supportive and creative community making music, and that was hugely formative for you. What were the key philosophies you took away from that time in terms of like shaping the kind of musician you want to be and the kind of music that you want to make?
It just felt really open there. Everyone was playing music together, just jamming. There was drum circles. There was now what I would think of as song sessions, but everything felt really informal and really inviting. And I met a few girls there. I guess it was my first year of college, and we formed a band. It was just amazing. We were just sharing songs, and it was like meeting people who also had been writing songs in their bedrooms in high school. Yeah, the philosophies were just, it felt really easy. You could just play with people, and then there were places to perform. And you didn't have to get really to any level at all to just play on a stage for people at an open mic, usually. And then there was just a lot of support. Santa Cruz has like the best audiences. Everyone's really cuddly in the audience and singing along. And so it never felt like there was really any judgment or stuck-upness around it.
You were taking songwriting inspiration. You mentioned Cat Power, and also people like Elliott Smith. And I'm wondering, when did you start getting into traditional fiddle music, and what did you like about it? And were there any kind of like cross, did like the Cat Power ever cross with traditional fiddle for you?
Not yet, but I'd like that. It was in Santa Cruz also. There's this amazing guy there, Jim Oakton. He saw some of the punks busking. We would play on the street, play at the farmer's market, and he would see some of my now friends busking, trying to play tunes, and was like, "All right, you guys need, this is great, but you need a little bit of help. So come over, I'll make you dinner, and I'll teach you some contra dance music." And that turned into this kind of weekly thing in Santa Cruz. And at some point, I got a fiddle. I was always playing just pretty much any instrument that was around. But I got a fiddle and started going to this tunes night. He would teach us, so contra dance music, as you know, on the East Coast, like, is a big mashup of styles. And some of those tunes were Irish tunes. Yeah, but that kind of got me going in this traditional music thing. And then I toured in Europe with Blackbird Rom and met the band Linkum, now Linkum, formerly Lynched, and went over to visit them in Ireland and realized that Tunes Night happens all the time in Ireland.
It's every hour of every day.
Every night. So I just thought it was the best place in the world.
Could you talk a little bit more about, you know, you decided to move to Ireland to pursue a master's degree. It's a really cool story of like being on tour and discovering that Ireland is the place that you want to be. Can you talk a little bit more about what drew you to the place?
Definitely the tunes. I mean, at the time that I first came to Ireland, it was pretty much 100% the tunes. Definitely spooky element. There's lots of old things here that was pretty unfathomable. I got so drawn in, and
You're probably over the Hot Topic spooky, and you were like, I want the real,
I
I
want
don't
the
want the
real
mall
deal.
spooky anymore. I want the real deal.
Get me into that like 17th century abbey. Yeah, exactly. It was like this also drive to really get better at an instrument, to be able to fully express myself on one, because which I'm still working on, but was just, yeah, sort of jack of all trades with instruments and wanted to know what it felt like to really understand one.
That sounds like such a big life decision to make. I mean, obviously there are other things going on, but it's like a big life decision to make for one instrument from somebody who plays multiple instruments. So, can you talk more about your relationship with the fiddle?
Yeah, it did feel like a big life decision. And I think part of it was almost like I went to Fiddle Tunes in Port Townsend for the first time and saw people who've been playing fiddle since they were kids. And I was really jealous. Like, I missed out. I felt like I missed out on something, and I wanted that that feeling. And with the fiddle, it got me really interested because it's so versatile. It's in so many folk styles, obviously. So it felt like a language I could learn where then I could talk to lots and lots of different people. And even if I wasn't fluent at all the things, I had like the tool to get in there. So yeah, I'm really just totally in love with it in the way where I also have really hated it sometimes.
So you lived in Ennis, Ireland, and you just recently moved.
Well, so I'm currently visiting in Sheffield, but I'm still hanging on to the apartment in Ennis. It's
okay.
Complicated COVID era, trying to figure stuff out kind of thing. Yeah.
So by the time this episode posts, who knows?
Who knows? Exactly.
Ennis sounds like it was where you first landed in Ireland. And I found out, and correct me if I'm wrong, that Ennis is the friendliest and the cleanest town in Ireland, like officially won those titles.
Yeah. Tidy Ennis, tidy towns, I think, are all the signs. I would agree with friendly. I don't know about tidy, though. But friendly, for sure.
How did you find the town, and how did living there change you?
Before I moved to the west part of the country, I spent a bunch of summers in Dublin. And that's where I first heard about this master's in Limerick. So I actually was kind of back and forth for a few years, but came over to Limerick, lived there for the first semester of this course. Heard about Ennis because it was only an hour bus ride away. And then I was just there every weekend because the tunes were amazing. So I said, you know what? Might as well just get a place there so I can be right in the heart of it. It changed me. Yeah, there's a lot of things. It's kind of like nostalgic almost at this point because it's so quiet there now. But at the time, sounds like talking about a different decade, even though it was just last year. But back in the day when there were tunes, it really taught me how to listen, I think. The musicians there just really listen to each other. And there can be 15 instruments in a session, but the best sessions are when everyone's really hearing each other. Mm. So that changed me. It also changed my tolerance to drinking whiskey.
I bet. Wow. Yeah, I bet. You also talk about having your apartment in Ennis near a Catholic church. Like, how close is this church, and what's that like for you?
It is truly close. It's like you can see it from the windows, and you can hear it all hours of the day. Yeah, strange. I think it feels like Catholicism is so understood throughout the country, and I just completely don't understand it and find it kind of like mysterious and strange. Yeah, it feels like this giant, like it really feels like it has a big influence, just sonically, if anything. Yeah, I kind of like, I find myself a bit fascinated with it. Not the religion, wow, but just the culture around it.
That makes sense for somebody who grew up around a culture of religion.
Yeah. Exactly.
So you were mentioning that you got your master's degree at the University of Limerick, which is there like a nickname for the University of Limerick, or do you just have to say that every time you refer to it?
UL.
UL. And yeah. The master's in UL is in Irish traditional music performance. And that experience as compared to like immersing yourself in the music of Irish pubs, how does each of those experiences compare in the way that they impact you and your playing?
I do think that if you have a good ear and you're ready to just get in the thick of it, I think just being in the sessions is the best way to learn. In Ennis is really where I feel like I learned music, or I continue to learn music. But UL, it definitely challenged me as a performer, just in general. Like, the nerves of actually playing something and have people actually adjudicating it and typing on the computer was just like next level from, you know, playing at the house shows. You'd have these semester performances, so you'd be like, you know, 25-minute performance, and they'd be saying, "How? Why did you pick a banjo player to play that tune with you?" So, yeah.
Oh, yeah, you're being, like, graded, basically.
Yeah.
Evaluated. Exactly. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And the other place, you're just, like, building up your tolerance for whiskey.
Exactly. The two don't cross over too well.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Or they do. Depends. Yeah.
And going back to the pub sessions and looking for songs, like, you yourself, like, looking for songs to share at these sessions, you started to look for, like, basically, it sounds like songs that were first inspiring you, like American fiddle tunes. Where did you find a commonality between the Irish music you were hearing and that music that you had learned previously from America?
A lot. I mean, well, with the fiddle tunes, I've been really fascinated with, and songs, like, with fiddle tunes and ballads, there's so many that are actually just... they just completely cross over. They're just the same tunes. I found that really interesting. I found that with ballads, I really wanted to sing in the sessions, but there's something about singing Irish ballads where it just doesn't feel, it's like, the only way I can describe it is that it doesn't fit in my mouth. Like, it doesn't quite, like, land with me in the same way, even if the concepts I can resonate with. So when I find these old ballads from people like Texas Gladden and stuff like that, it just feels like, yes, that's the energy I can put into it. And like those words like feel better to say.
Yeah. I'm learning Spanish right now, so that really hits, that resonates with me, because I'll try to pronunciate the Spanish and it's like your mouth is like, ugh. It's not.
Yeah,
that's wild though that it translates to like from Irish tunes to American tunes. Yeah, that's cool.
Even if it's in English, there's something about like saying the green fields of Erin, which doesn't always like feel genuine to me. And I think I'm just really I'm really sensitive to songs feeling truthful or not.
County Clare, which is where Ennis is, I keep mispronouncing the town. Ennis,
it's like Dennis, take away the D.
Dennis, okay. I will never forget it now. County Clare is the center of Irish music, and there's this thing that happens with phrasing in County Clare in music known as the lonesome touch, which I think is like a concept when someone is singing, and I was wondering if you could explain that and why you think it resonates with people so much.
The lonesome touch is something that Martin Hayes has talked about a lot, and his music seems to be like this real celebration of it. Clare music is slower. It tends, like traditionally, it tends to be a bit slower and less ornamented and less like, it's just got this nice kind of, you're sitting back and playing it feel. The funny thing though is that Ennis, the sessions there are extremely fast. They're actually like, it's a real mix of people from around the country in Ennis. I think that concept's interesting because I don't think it needs to be slow necessarily. I think when someone really is connected to the melody, it can have that feeling almost like you're singing the tune, even if you're playing it a million miles an hour.
So your music gives a feeling of like isolation and loneliness, speaking of the lonesome touch. And it sounds like you spent about 6 months alone in Alaska. Is that true?
Yeah, I did, yeah.
How did that time change your relationship to loneliness? And maybe how did it help you understand lonely people and get that to translate in your music?
I think it was the first time I really felt alone. You know how you can feel lonely as a high schooler or like a hormonal teenager? I think I'd already
talking my language.
Yeah, even if you're surrounded by people kind of thing.
Yeah.
So it was the first time I was not surrounded by people. It almost like built my tolerance up to just hanging out by myself. It seemed really daunting at first, waking up being like, who am I going to hang out with? What am I going to do? And then getting into a groove where I really enjoyed it. I don't know if I really felt lonely. I just felt really, really alone. And ended up kind of digging it.
The studio that you recorded No Summer, which is your new record, which is amazing. It's so good. the studio was in a church north of Seattle that the Microphones and Mount Erie have recorded albums at. How did that environment help you shape the atmosphere of the album and then also like get into the proper spooky headspace?
First of all, I just love the Unknown studio. It's really bizarre and echoey, and there's lots of organs like lining all the walls. So we recorded our first album, The Unconscious Echo, there with like a big group of musicians.
Oh, it's the same studio for both records? Okay, yeah, I thought I read that, but I wasn't sure. That's cool.
Yeah, yeah. We just had to go back, basically, because it was such a good experience. And so going in the second time, I kind of had a sense of the acoustics and of working with Nick. I knew I was going to be spending a couple nights there on my own in the studio, so I had to kind of gear myself up because Nick says it's haunted.
What do you say?
What do I say? I don't know if it's haunted. I didn't particularly feel that it was haunted.
Do you know what the feeling is like if a place is haunted? Not to get off topic or anything.
Get on the spooky train.
Right.
That's a good question. I'm going to have to come back to you on that.
Okay.
It's my next album.
Yeah. All right. Cool. Yeah. So, okay. And then when you're staying at the church, it does sound like really spooky to stay there by yourself. And I'm imagining you're like sleeping on the altar, but that's probably not what it was like, right?
More like on a mattress on the floor, but
underneath the organ.
Exactly. Yeah.
So on the record, you have a few traditional songs and you say, I gravitate towards ballads from a strong female perspective, usually about critiquing men and marriage and about the struggle and desperation of being a woman in older times. How do you think those struggles can be related to in modern times? Why are you drawn to like those old-timey struggles?
I think it's really cool that there are ballads that have that perspective about a woman, like from a woman's perspective in the canon of these old songs, because a lot of them are love songs, of course, and then also a lot of them are murder ballads. So it feels like there's these gems of like true cutting honesty from a woman all the way back then. So that gets me. It just, the tone of it just, it feels relevant, as I said, like being, it feels like something I can honestly express, even if I haven't lived the same struggle.
One of the songs on the album, Our Ladies, is about an asylum that was near where you were living in Ennis. And you were saying that people don't talk about it that much. And then you got some friends to open up about it. And then people started basically just like nonstop telling you stories about the asylum. And like, I know a lot of Irish people and like Irish Catholic people. I'd love to hear more about the stories that you were hearing. And then also like, what did you take away from that experience about how people in Ireland might just like push away things that are painful? And what was it like when they opened up to you about their stories?
Yeah, honestly, I really only got little tidbits. I don't think anyone ever said how they felt about the place other than feeling like I was absolutely crazy for getting anywhere near it. I just could not relate. I didn't get a lot of emotional stories about it, but I have had a couple people since the album's come out contact me and just say, like, I used to play around there as a kid, and, you know, people recognizing it. And I wonder what that's like, since it's not talked about so much.
Yeah, just like thinking about how hard it is to get Irish family members to like open up about things sometimes is pretty hard. So I wondered if it like it sounds like it was a similar situation, like, oh, I can't do an Irish accent, like, oh, we don't talk about that, you know, like, that's private.
Yeah. And it's strange because it's just this big looming thing that no one's doing anything with.
It's a cool song.
Thank you. I was pretty happy with that song. I just really wanted to capture the feeling for people that won't ever see it. I was excited that I think I did.
And I think everybody's got that, like, local asylum that is closed down that no one talks about. We had one in the town next to ours, and they used to have a haunted house in it, which seems, like, so wrong.
Did you go?
Yeah, I did. It was right by the Dairy Queen.
Oh, yeah. Well, then you get a little... full treat when you come out.
Yeah.
Get terrified, get nightmares, and then get a little blizzard.
Your voice is so striking on your recordings. How did you learn to sing and cultivate your style of singing?
I just started doing it. I did some musicals as a kid. I think my first solo was...
I can't believe we're just talking about this now.
Grease.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't get really far with that, to be honest, but I did get my one solo, and that was pretty exciting.
In Grease?
I think I just sang really loud. Yeah, in Grease, yeah. It's not a song that's in the movie, I don't think. I think it's just in the play. Freddie, My Love.
I don't know that one, but that's awesome. Congratulations.
You're not missing too much. Thank you. Yeah, still proud.
You were a loud singer.
Yeah, so I think that kind of got me going when I was maybe 10. But no one really ever taught me. I just sang. And I try not to think about it too much. I try not to, like, overthink it or perfect it. But when I was playing with Blackbird Rum, I just had to sing really loud. And I remember playing in, like, squats full of tons of people and just thinking about projecting, like, all the way to the wall. I don't know if that sounded good, but it was loud.
You were just mentioning, and I've read a lot, that you were playing in squats, which I think I know what that is, but can you explain what a squat is?
So technically, I guess a squat would just be an abandoned place that, you know, someone or multiple people take over and just live there, just make it their own until someone kicks them out. Or I think there's some laws where if you squat something long enough, you can legally get the rights to it. And in Europe, like on that first tour I did with Blackbird Rum, I learned about this massive European squatting culture where people would take over. There were some squatted prisons, squatted like World War II bases, wow. Farmhouses. Yeah, collectives of people, radical politics, like sometimes growing on their own food, fixing bikes. And then, yes, a lot of these places will just have a venue in the basement. So it was kind of a tour of, like, the squats of Europe, and it totally blew my mind.
That's amazing. Wow. And kind of, like, in talking about that environment and that, like, political environment, like, you have... I don't know how strongly you feel about this in terms of, like, political stuff, but you have talked about, like, the importance of being anti-fascist and have enjoyed being engaged in, like, far-left politics in the U.S., even though it sounds like in Ireland that seems far away. But how do you think this side of you impacts your writing or your approach to music?
I think it's subconsciously there, especially with traditional material. I'm gonna, like, veer away from old racist ballads, you know, but in terms of my actual music, I think I'm just writing as much from the heart as possible. And it's the venues and the types of promoters I'll work with and or won't work with, that where that comes across, I think.
Okay, that makes sense. You have this really cool history of like just like being like a righteous punk, but you also like play fiddle and like sing beautiful like traditional folk ballads. It's like pretty insane that you have that like duality.
I guess it's just a been a journey. And still is.
Before we go, would you mind doing the lightning round with me?
Yeah, what is that? What do we do? Sounds like a drinking game.
It's kind of a drinking game where you answer fun questions that are surface level about yourself.
Okay.
You'll get all of the answers right, no matter what.
Sweet. Have fun. All right. Okay.
Here we go. All right, what was the first song you learned on the guitar?
I was gonna get it right. It was probably something by the Beatles.
Karaoke song.
My Heart Will Go On.
Oh my god, with the fiddle?
Oh yeah.
I would love to hear that. That would be so great. Oh, yeah. I'm imagining it. It's glorious. Okay, dogs or cats or something else?
Definitely cats.
What is your coffee order?
Oh, over here. The flat white.
What is your favorite junk food?
Gummies, sour gummies.
First album you bought with your own money?
Probably a Punkorama compilation.
Yeah, it was. First concert?
Aaron Carter. Not very punk.
Ooh, no. That was a surprise. It was right up there with the musical theater.
Yeah, same era.
Beatles or Rolling Stones?
Beatles.
Flying or invisibility?
Oh, nice. Flying.
Last question. Where is the most beautiful place you've ever visited?
It's a tie between Donegal in Ireland and Alaska.
That's awesome. Amelia Baker, you are so rad. Thank you so much for talking to me today. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Cindy. It was nice to talk to you. It was really fun.
Basic Folk This Week, produced by Laura McCarthy. Lindsay Myers is our business manager. Alex Stanton of Townspeople does our music on Basic Folk. I'm your host, Cindy Howes. It's been a pleasure to be with you. Thank you so much for listening all the way to the end. We are on the American Songwriter Podcast Network. Thanks to them. And if you liked this episode and think you want to share it, you should, because sharing is caring. That's what they say. Anyways, I'll talk to you next time. Oh yeah, one more thing. You can find all the episodes of Basic Folk anywhere you get your podcasts. There's 101 episodes to dig back into. Or you can find them at my website, cindyhowes.net. Okay, I'll talk to you later. Okay, bye.